Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is live. It is a Victory Monday, a Reaction Monday. Shout out to Figgy's, put a little double duty. Get well soon, Tyler Milner, as he is under the weather. Hopefully he is back with us tomorrow. But Clint, there's a lot for us to get to. As we said, the coach's show behind us, D'Amico Ryans, if you missed it, he was on as he spoke to the media earlier today. I know I was listening when In the Loop had that going live. If you missed that, you might want to catch that again over there in the 12 o'clock hour or in the 11 o'clock hour. But you will get to hear from him after we get done coming up next after us, the coaches show with D'Amico Ryans. But, Clint, there's a lot to get to here. But that was an ass-kicking that they put on the Ravens. I'm a bit surprised by how that game went. Not surprised that the Texans won, but surprised that they won so emphatically and in a dominant fashion. But when you look at this, Clint, the overall view of this, because, I mean, we will break down parts of it, Clint, but, I mean, this wasn't no tight one. This wasn't no tight one that you got to really get down and say, oh, boy, they're in the third quarter.
Yeah,
they really,
yeah, yeah.
No, this was just an ass kicking from start to finish. Just overall, your thoughts on what you watch yesterday.
Ronnie, it's easy for me, man. I think the Texans were in a spot. You start 0-3, you can't sugarcoat it, man. You're fragile. You're at a fork in the road. Your organization is really dealing with adversity and being tried, if you will. And so you'd go one of two directions, Ron. And I think the way that we can define those directions is, are you closer to the top third of the league, or are you closer to the bottom third of the league?
Yep.
Are you closer to the Titans in this division, or are you closer to the Colts and the Jags in this division? Like, where do you stand? And I think it's very real that as a team, the Houston Texans, what they've shown yesterday and what they've shown really over the last 2 weeks, the last eight quarters of football, is that as an organization, as a team, they're closer to the top than they are the bottom, number one. Yeah. I think they needed that in a major, major way.
Seemed like you needed that.
I definitely needed it. The fan base needed it. Every fan I've ever talked to, they needed it. There's no doubt about it, right? But you've proven that you're in the top half more so than the bottom half. And the rest of the schedule is going to play out in a way of where you're going to have opportunities sooner rather than later to prove that you belong in the top third. Maybe you belong in the top 10, and you can right this ship moving forward. That opportunity presents itself. You've earned that right getting your record to 2-3. But this was a Texans get right game, which was needed in a major, major way. If we drill down to specific issues with this football team, right on the offensive side of the football, I think we thought and we assumed and we were heard, you know, we had heard throughout training camp that they were watching this old Brady film, and this was going to be that style of offense more so than the Rams style of offense. We heard C.J. Stroud talk about death by a thousand cuts style of offense, right? I think the question was, can they commit to it? Can they have success with it? Can Nick Caley be creative within it? Do they have weapons other than Nico Collins? Can they commit to Dalton Schultz early? Can C.J. Stroud protect himself and the offensive line by committing to this death by a thousand cuts identity on offense? And they have. I know the first part of the Tennessee Titans game didn't go the way you wanted to from a box score, from a scoreboard. But there's eight quarters worth of this death by a thousand cuts, and it's resulted in 70 damn points. in the last 2 weeks. Any way you slice it, and you can argue that CJ left a couple of touchdowns on the field earlier in that Tennessee game, so it should have been more. I think what they've done was get right and get quality, valuable reps within the identity of who they need to be and want to be offensively. Ron, they scored on their first 8 possessions, 5 touchdowns, 3 field goals. Their quarterback had an 85% completion. 8 different Texans pass catchers caught footballs. 10 were targeted. I mean, this is exactly, by the way, very balanced. They ran the football well also. This is another 4 quarters of exactly who they want to be and what they want to be on the offensive side of the football. And that, given where the Texans' offense was, is extremely, extremely valuable and should be, you know, something that we see some real growth because of moving forward.
Yeah, I see, which is, I think, fair. I see people who have talked about the opponents and the Titans, how bad the Titans are and how bad, I mean, I don't even know if skeleton crew is what you would call it with the Ravens. I mean, they had even more guys missing than I thought they would have. But I don't care. I mean, as C.J. Gardner-Johnson would say, that was belts to asses. Sorry, guys. But, yeah, as he would say, that was belts to asses. And they're in the NFL, and they still got some dudes over there. When Tommy Townsend ain't got to get off the bench to do his job till there's about 7 minutes left, and it's really just because you're like, hey, man, we throwing Davis in there, man. We're not even really trying. We're just trying to get the hell up on out of here. Like, that's when you throw that out there. I don't care who you facing. Right, like, listen, we will, yes, there is a fair thing to talk about, like, who they've played. But they didn't look functional at times. They didn't look like, from an offensive perspective, they didn't look like they were ever going to get it together. And yesterday, Clint, I mean, hell, they did whatever the hell they wanted. And I think the point that you made there was, and they didn't just make it easy. They ran their offense and did things that they want to be, they want to do, and they had success on it. I mean, that was that. I don't care who you're playing. You have got to feel at least that the offense is moving in the right direction. We'll see what they do against other teams. But you at least have to feel like they're moving in the right. Better put a 44 on somebody. Mm-hmm. I mean, just waxed
them. And did it and took the foot off the gas in the fourth quarter. Here's the deal, Ron. This was a game – to me, and we've seen teams do it in the past, not necessarily the Texans, but just teams in general, right? You start 0-3, you beat a lowly, Tennessee team that looks like they're on the way to firing their head coach, and then you've got an opponent that is just beat to hell. You get a quarter into the game and you realize, hey, man, this team can't keep up with us. We can do whatever we want, whenever we want, and we can score some points and we can have us a good day and we can get on a plane and with a win and enjoy our plane trip home and enjoy our bye week. And at that point in time, you got a choice. Do you stay dialed in and do you commit to what it is you're trying to build offensively, or do you go back to this whole, all right, we're going to stretch the field, we're going to take a bunch of risk, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that just because the opponent ain't worth the damn. I always say this. There's nothing worse to me than watching a team go get 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 wins, beat up on a bunch of bad teams, doing stuff that you know is never going to work in the playoffs. You know it's never going to work versus playoff caliber defenses. You know you don't have a puncher's chance of doing those things when the opponent is a well-coached, well-oiled machine or one of the better defenses in the league. You know you have no you watch it and you're going, ain't no way it's going to work, right? The Texans had an opportunity Sunday. They could have done that. They could have done things. They could have hard play action. CJ could have sat back there, patted the football, and thrown the damn thing down the field. I mean, hell, look how wide open Christian Kirk was on that basic cross route they do.
What'd you say? Last week, you didn't think he could run away from anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's just they could have done, Ron, they could have done so many different things that were not within the identity and that was not conducive to, you know, creating the identity and getting good work within their system, and they didn't do it, man. The value in going, hey, This is like a practice, man. I need you to see CJ. I need you to be wholeheartedly committed, man. This is what we're going. I know the score is out of whack. I know you want to have fun. I know you want to stretch the field. I know there's opportunities, but man, I need you to stay within this offense and get it done. And they did that for 4 quarters, 3 quarters. The fourth quarter was it was all over.
Nick Cayley turn you on?
Yes, Yeah, Nick Caley.
I will say Nick could have had a blindfold and just started picking plays. But still, I saw what it felt like to me, and you know it better than I do. I saw it felt like he wasn't just – it looked like he had a plan with his play calling. It looked like there was
setting
some
stuff up. Yeah.
It looked like there was a plan with what he was trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, again, the rant I just went on is really a Nick Caley rant. Nick Caley could have got real excited and wanted his quarterback to throw for 400 yards and 6 touchdowns instead of doing what they did, and because they could have done more, right? But you look at the job that Nick Caley did, he was absolutely tremendous. The list that I have of Nick Caley pats on the ass is lengthy, y'all. The first drive scored, the script that we always talk about, was tremendous, right? Not only did you score points, not only was the play calling balanced and getting everybody involved, but you took the air out of the wind, if you will, out of the sails of a Baltimore crowd that Sunday, if they were going to compete, the crowd was going to have to be a factor given how many guys were out, right? So you just look at that script, you look at that first drive, absolute money. Let's look big picture, and we're going to talk about this later in the show. Nico Collins' usage, Dalton Schultz' usage. Let's talk about a new player, British Brooks, the usage of him from the fullback perspective in critical moments in short yardage situations. Let's talk about how all of a sudden the outside run game, the outside zone, not the toss zone, but the outside zone was a big part of what they were doing in the run game. The red zone play calling, there were multiple. Hell, a Harrison Bryant throwing the ocean touchdown got called back, and he came back and hit a touchdown to Nico Collins. I mean, the red zone play calling across the board was multiple, and he had several throwing the oceans for his quarterback. Let's talk about play action and boot action type stuff. It was effective. Super balanced run pass. Spread the ball around. I mentioned it. 10 different players were targeted. 8 caught balls from CJ or Davis Mills. I mean, this was a game when I think if this thing takes off, this will be the game where you look back and you go, okay, Nick Caley was in his bag. Nick Caley's starting to kind of figure some things out. And not that all this is going to translate to a better opponent, but I do think it's a really good sign.
Yeah, no, it is. And again, we will have a week, 2 weeks. We understand the opponent. And as someone texted in and said, oh, so y'all think this offense is back now? I'm not saying.
No.
I'm not saying. I'm just saying you at least look at them and you're like, all right, they're taking a good step. They're taking a step into the right direction. We understand the opponent. Yes, I think it would have been different if Roquan Smith and Marlon Humphrey and Kyle Hamilton and Matt Ibike were out there. I think it would have been different. I don't know that I think the Ravens would have just stopped them. Right? I mean, I don't know they would have put 44 on them. But I do think they went from – there were moments in the Rams, Bucks, and Jags games, they just didn't look functional. Like, they just didn't look like – it almost looked like the plays that they had success were luck or given to them in a way. Or mistakes made by the defense, like the long touchdown Nico got against the Jags. Now it looked like, all right, they found an ability to have a rhythm, you know, in even throughout that Titans game that really showed in the fourth quarter. It looked like they had a rhythm. So I'm not saying the offense is back. Will I be surprised if they go up to Seattle and struggle some? No. But I will be surprised if they go to Seattle and it looks, you know, like it did at times before. They've got a little bit more of an understanding of what they're doing.
Nobody's saying anybody's back. Look, when the season started, we thought they were going to win 10 games and we're damn sure going to win the division. Nobody's, at least on this show, is at that point right now. But the reality of it is there was some good that was accomplished over the last 2 weeks. And it looks like they've got an identity offensively that they actually want to build with and build towards. It looks like the quarterback is committed to it. It looks like the offensive play caller knows how to move Nico Collins around and get him touches in multiple ways. It looks like their young receivers and their others, if you will, it looks like those guys are coming. Is it all going to work out and bear fruit versus a better opponent, which Seattle is a significantly better opponent? The crowd there will be in it. It's prime time. You will get challenged in a major way up there in Seattle. I don't know if it all you know shows up in that particular moment, but what I'm saying right now after back-to-back weeks is that I don't need to minimize the first three quarters with the Titans game. I think the quarterback, C.J. Stroud, left a touchdown on the field, and he left an explosive on the field. Your kicker missed a field goal. I think you left several points on the field. I look at the offense and go, there were some good things there, and it just took you the fourth quarter to explode. I look at this game, there were some really good things. I'm just telling you, if we could have very easily watched that this Baltimore game and thought, well, hell, you're just throwing bombs now.
Yeah, you just let Nico and them run past some of these guys we've never heard of.
You're just glad you don't have Will and Daniil coming off the edges in training camp at your ass, and now you're just doing stuff that you know your offensive line's not going to hold up when they got better pass rushers over there. Like, you're just doing silly stuff. Yeah. But what we watched was a very coordinated effort to create an identity on the offensive side of the football. And then Ron, the other part of it is we watched a very coordinated effort on the defensive side of the football to stop the downhill run between the tackles, right? The Baltimore Ravens, one of the more physical offensive lines, really organizations, but one of the more physical offensive lines in the game with a two-headed monster, and you even throw the Mitchell kid in there as a third running back option, that could hit you in multiple ways. And, hell, one of them's Derrick Henry, a running back that I think we've seen go for over 200 yards against the Texans in his damn career five times.
Say repeatedly.
Right? I mean, so I think – like, this defense stopped that stuff, that run, to the tune of they had 28 rush yards through three quarters. Would you say they ended up with 44? Like, what they were able to accomplish in a sense of what the shortcomings were on both sides of the football coming into the game, they were able to make huge strides. How does it play moving forward? I have no idea. But they were able to make huge strides, and they got the most that they possibly could out of a matchup against Tennessee and a banged-up Baltimore team.
C.J. Stroud, what was his grade yesterday? We'll talk to our quarterback, get your thoughts coming up next as we continue right here live on The Drive. All right, welcome back on a Victory Monday. The Texans go in for the first time ever in Baltimore and beat the Baltimore Ravens. This has been the bugaboo team for the Texans since the D'Amico Ryan situation started. I think every team in the league, including the Chiefs, who have been the gold standard the last, you know, decade. Every team in the league, the Texans have pretty much played with for the most part. They beat the Bengals on the road, who had been one of those powers, right? They beat the Bills at home last year, and they played the Chiefs, you know, pretty well over the last, you know, few years. But the one team that has had their number unlike anybody else is the Ravens. Like, every time they've played them, it felt like they didn't belong on the field with them. And this time it was clearly the opposite. So it was good to see the Texans go ahead and exercise some of those demons. But we do this every single week at this time after the game on Sunday. And we go to C.J. Stroud's grade, 713-572-4610. YouTube and Twitch, you can jump in on this. C.J. Stroud, 85%+ completion percentage. He was 23 of 27, 244 yards, four touchdown passes, no picks, no turnovers, 30 yards rushing, and a quarterback rating of 143.9, and he did it in three quarters. He the last 2 weeks, he has looked like the cat from his first year. 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch. What was C.J. Stroud's grade, in your opinion? Clint, as you're a former quarterback in the league in college football, and you've watched this, you've coached quarterbacks, your grade for C.J. Stroud yesterday?
Yeah, I got an A. I mean, really the only reason this was not an A-plus is because it's clearly one of the worst defenses in football. I mean, I got to reserve the A-plus for C.J. Stroud when it's either a shootout and he just blows the box score up and plays this efficient, or when the opponent is better and he goes out there and plays like this and wins a ball game. So I've got to give myself a little room for the best CJ performance that's possible to up the ante. So I just went with an A. This was an unbelievable game for CJ Stroud. I mean, there was a little bit of everything. 85% completion. It's a new career high. Single game high for him. And as I said earlier, he was flirting with 90% until that last drive and the protection broke down back-to-back plays. He was flirting with 90%. So And it was a convincing 85%. It spread the ball around to all these different targets, 10 different targets, 8 different guys had catches. Again, I mentioned it a couple of times in the first segment, the committing to that death by a thousand cuts approach for a quarterback that typically wants to sit in there and just aggressive, aggressive, aggressive. I think that's who CJ is by nature. For him to sit in there in a moment when he can be aggressive but stay committed to the approach, I think is absolute money. You look at how he played in the red zone. Yes, there were some throw in the oceans there, which is what you hope you get from Nick Caley, but there were some tight window throws. The back shoulder throw was absolute money. I just think overall CJ Stroud could not have played better football. I think the commitment to getting the football out, like the mid-range game, the play action, play action to the right, quick glance throw to Nico to the left, a couple of different throws to Dalton Schultz in, I would call it, the mid-range game, 10 to 15 yards. It's not like he was going out there and he was just really good in the quick game, right? This game didn't consist of many, if any, screens. So everything was literally a forward pass and everything was literally beyond the line of scrimmage. And he was elite in that mid-range game as well. And once again, when the shots were called and the shots were taken, they were in moments where, yes, they're lower percentage throws because they take longer and you got to throw them further down the field. The further a ball travels in the air, the less likely it is to be caught, right? It's just common sense. The go route to Nico Collins early in the game didn't hit it, but it was effective. Right? I love that shot. The deep shot, play action shot, to Christian Kirk was a throw in the ocean. That was beautiful. There was one more shot somewhere. I don't remember. The back shoulder to Hutch, which was absolute. I mean, it was a dime. And so, yeah, man, I don't know that CJ could play any better personally. I think the opponent could be better, and he could be forced to do a little bit more and maybe be better and be more aggressive because the game dictates it. But for me, man, this is about an A can get for CJ Stroud.
Yeah, I'll go full go. I'll go A+. Okay. I get what you're saying from the opponent standpoint. But I mean, man, 4 tutties. He almost ran another one in. And he used his legs. One time he made the decision to run on a third down and then ran it all the way down and nearly scored on it, but then didn't say, "Well, hell, man, I'm gonna keep doing this." No, he didn't. He chose and was judicial with the amount of times he'd run, which was a good 1 for 30 yards, which is a good average right there. And like we said, man, the special skill that he has of just being able to put the ball where he wants to, we saw that in a big time way. And that back shoulder throw to Hutch, the timing and everything was fantastic. His other touchdown to Nico Collins in traffic put it right there on the money for him to go get. So I thought he was strong. I'll give you an A+. Text line coming in, A-. Someone else, a solid A. That's an A+ overall for CJ. That's how CJ will look with great protection. A+, 8 straight drives with points, either 7 or 3. Incredible. No picks or fumbles. He looked great. No, I thought he did. I thought that was these last two games. This game and then the last quarter, the fourth quarter of the Titans game, that looked like the CJ Stroud in which people were like, "Hey man, this dude might be able to get up in here with the elite of the elite." That's what we've seen the last couple of times. Ball not even hitting the ground damn near at all. As only 4.
Looked like he was playing 7-on-7, man.
He did, man. He was comfortable and putting it on the money. All right, coming up as we continue, by the way, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus. Can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. We will have to revisit our hot takes. We had our weekend hot takes.
Mine did not age well.
Let's see. Tyler, you're not here. That's all right. We'll still look at yours. I don't feel half bad about mine. I think there is a legit argument if I hit my hot take. I know I hit one piece of it. Did I complete the whole thing? And Also, we want to look at a guy that really stood out that many aren't talking about following this game. We'll do that coming up next. Shout out to our guy, Ficky, doing a little double duty in the building as Tyler is under the weather, man. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah.
I'll make sure Tyler brings you a bottle of wine or something tomorrow.
Okay. Figgy, that'd be perfect tomorrow.
You like it red, don't you?
Yeah, he do.
Yeah.
Yep.
What are you, a cab? Your red blend? What?
I like red.
Red blend. Any red. I think you're more of a red blend guy, probably.
Yeah.
A red blend has a tendency to be a little bit easier on the palate. You know what I mean? You them cabs and stuff. Boy, I got to where I have a real hard time drinking wine, even with my wife.
Really?
Well, one of two things happens. Like, it hits me with some serious heartburn, or I wake up the next day with a banger. Me and my wife, we drank a bottle of wine. Took my wife to a nice little dinner, a little date night, dating my bride, you know what I mean? Bought a bottle of wine. We split it right down the middle, two glasses each.
Nice
little date. We didn't think nothing of it. Went on home. Decent hour. Relieved old granny of the babysitting. Kids were already in bed. Had us a good little wrestling match. And then
a little tussle, huh?
Next morning, I wake up with a banger. And I'm like, what the hell? I look over her. She's like, yeah, my head's throbbing. I'm like, man, all we had was.
The hell did y'all do it?
The hell happened?
Him head boys.
So I'm about. No. From the wine. Dirtbag. The wine has just not been good to me lately. I'd love to give me a nice little glass of grape now.
If it's the only thing I drink, I'm fine. If I didn't mix in a bottle of wine and I'm
couple
drinking
shots.
Yeah, or I'm drinking hard liquor too. That's when I get it headache and trouble.
But I just assumed we were all adults here, and that wasn't an option, Ryan.
No, well, that's not true.
I mean, what are you doing? You going beer, dark liquor, clear liquor, and wine all in one night, or what? I mean, there was a time.
Sometimes when me and the wife go out for dinner, maybe we might.
Well, you two need to grow up.
Maybe we might. Well, she doesn't always do it, but maybe we go out. Hey, man, we start off. Let's get a little drink.
Let's get a little.
Have a little drink, maybe. Maybe you know. Maybe I get.
I'm still out here going hard.
Maybe I do me an old fashioned.
If I got wine, that's it. I'm not drinking anything else.
And then the dinner comes. And then sometimes, all right, well, here, man, let me get a glass of wine with this meal. Sometimes, you know, that might get me in trouble.
And then you stumble off into a little after party, and all of a sudden they got one of them frozen drink machines, and you grab one of those.
And I drive home, man. I got a daiquiri spot on the way home, baby.
Hey, Fig, I got a hold of Ron
just
one time.
Just trying to figure out if I'm getting that 28-ounce or that 32.
Hey, I hit Ron up. I knew Ron who was out with his wife one night, and I me and Red stopped at a little spot over here, and I stayed out later than I wanted to. Well, I hit old Ron up. I said, hey, man, I know you and the bride's out, man. Y'all come on by. Ron was three sheets in the wind. Yeah, I'll be there. I knew he was. I'll be there. Yeah, we're going to slide by there. Yeah, I said, Ron, look, it closes at midnight now. If you come, you got to come on now. I'll have one drink, one nightcap.
I was waiting on the car to get there.
He said, one nightcap. I said, yeah, come on, man, let's have one nightcap. Man, I didn't talk to Ron until next Monday.
I was a bad man. That's what I threw up, man.
Was it the daiquiris?
Man, that day, I had a lot.
Damn.
And then
when I talked to him on the phone, I knew he had a lot.
I had a lot. I mean, I had a lot of variety.
We were in a small, like, real cool small lounge area, and I knew Ron was three sheets. And the cats that was working there, a couple of bartenders and a general manager, they were listeners. They had already come over. Like, hey, man, we love the show, man. We love y'all. Blah blah blah. And so I was waiting for Ron to come bust in that door and get all loud and be. Nope. It ghosted me.
I told
my buddy at the front door, they got a big bodyguard, like a big door guy. I said, hey, man, look, I know it's going to be closing time, but I got my partner coming by here, man. He said, I'm going to go back in here now, but don't push me. Well, it's just him and his wife. Hey, man, I didn't see you till next Monday, man.
Hey, I'm telling you, I'm riding home. She's driving. She's cracking up. I can't keep my glasses on my face. I'm sitting there, and they just keep sliding off my face. I couldn't. I was in a bad spot, man. That night I had wine, I had a frozen drink, I had two beers, I had a couple of whiskey and sevens. I mean, I just hit the gun.
His brother had the whole left side of the menu.
And then somehow I went to, was it Frank's? Is that the pizza spot downtown? Went to Frank's Pizza and somehow slid into a brisket pizza.
What?
Yeah, man, I had a whole lot working.
Why not, man?
I had a whole lot working. All right, I know you want to send a shout-out to MJ Stewart. MJ Stewart, who I better not say replacing because that's what D'Amico said. It's not replacing. But he was the one who stepped in after C.J. Gardner-Johnson was let go. And he really stood out to you in a game where a lot of people stood out.
Well, I think there's a B story here on this game. Several A's, it went so well. But I do think there is a B story here with this game that is it starts with M.J. Stewart. I think M.J. Stewart, is call it a fill-in, call it whatever the hell you want. I think M.J. Stewart is jumping off the field with some of the things that they're doing with him. He's not afraid to get downhill and get super physical. They blitzed him from depth at one point, and he didn't impact the play, but it took a hell of an effort by the running back to get over and get him blocked. And it just, like, he is a guy that I always thought, yeah, he's there, just don't make mistakes, and everything's going to be fine. But to me, Sunday, he showed that he can actually be a difference maker. I thought he jumped off the film two or three times, which is good to see, and hopefully we continue to see that. I thought Nick Chubb, we've talked a little bit about Nick Chubb, but Nick Chubb having a little bit of an extra gear and maybe not being as old and washed up as a lot of folks thought he maybe was. I don't know if he is or he isn't, but it looked like there was a little extra gear there. And then there was no rotation at the left guard position. Looks like Juice Scruggs has taken that position over. So I think some of those, as you peel back the layers of the onion with this game, I do think there are some B topics there that are worth mentioning, man. And again, it starts with MJ Stewart. I thought this defense is obviously really good, but when you say MJ Stewart, you think special teams, backup, fill in, reserve, safety. I watched that game on Sunday in a game where you needed him to get downhill and fill in run fits and make sure they don't get things rolling in the run game, and he was up for the task and he did it in a super physical nature. So tip to cap to MJ Stewart, Nick Chubb, and Juice Scruggs. Looks like he's taking over at left guard spot.
Yes, sir. Let's let the five go. Let's just do that. Right? Let's just have a five and have no damn rotation over at no guard spot. That's just weird. Let's revisit. Last week we started the weekend hot take, and we said, no, man, you don't just get to make the take and then just keep on rolling. No, we revisit that son of a gun coming up on Monday, and now it's Monday. Now, Tyler slipped himself out. He's under the weather. He's not here. That's why you hear the voice of Figgy Fig that you can catch every day from 10 to 2 on In the Loop. But Tyler's hot take was, we will see our first head coach fired this weekend. The Titans. Brian Callahan will get fired by the time this show is over on Monday. He felt like we would see that, and I'll be damned if we were well on our way to seeing that happen. But what really happened is the Titans had a comeback win, the craziest game I've seen in a long time, and they went at the buzzer 22-21 after being down 21-3, one of five double-digit comebacks on the day in week five. I don't think Brian Callahan's going to get fired after that game. The way that thing was shaping up, though, I mean, you got a guy missing extra points. They were awful.
It looked like it was destined. I mean, they scored to get it to a what would have been a 3-point game, and he misses the extra point.
I think he would have made it 21-13. I think it would have been a one possession.
Yeah, that's game. Right. That's right. You one are correct. It would have got it to an 8-point game. You are correct. It would have got it to an 8-point game.
And he missed it, and he damn near missed the game winner the same way. I mean, that went the same way and just barely stayed in. So I don't think he's going to get fired. Clint, yours was Vandy would go on the road and beat Alabama. Really happened was Bama won 30-14. Now, I will say going into the fourth quarter, it was a one possession game. It was 20-14, but Alabama just overpowered them.
Well, this Ty Simpson kid at Alabama is, look, we've seen in Kalen DeBoer's offense, we've seen Michael Penix Jr. have an amazing couple of years, and so it's not like that with that Alabama talent that if you get the right quarterback in there, they're not gonna offensively be a tough stop. And I think this Ty Simpson kid has a real chance to be that guy. I mean, he's jumped on the scene over the last few weeks to be one of the better quarterbacks in college football, and I think it eventually broke through against Vandy.
All right, my hot take was the Patriots would go into Buffalo and give the Bills their first loss, and Drake May will outplay Josh Allen. Now, I know I got one of those right. The Patriots did hand them their first loss at the buzzer. Well, it really wasn't at the buzzer, but a late field goal to win it. And then I don't know if it's clear if Drake May outplayed Josh. Drake May, 22 of 30, 273, no touchdowns, no turnovers, rushed for 12 yards, had the game-winning drive for them to kick that field goal to win it. Josh Allen, 21 of 30, 253, so less yards, two touchdowns, two turnovers, but he rushed for 53 yards. I'm close.
Well, it's got to be close. I mean, you're talking about a young.
I'm close.
I mean, you're talking about a quarterback that went 22 of 30, so his completion percentage is better. He didn't throw any interceptions, and I mean,
most threw for 20 more yards.
Yeah, but most folks, when you get to the interception column, and one didn't throw it, and the other one threw two, and guess which team won? I would say that the quarterback outplayed the other. So I think if you take the names. I think if you take the names off the back of the jersey or the names out of that box score, I think you'd pick the guy that didn't throw interceptions. So I think you hit the nail on the head, Ron.
God damn. I'll tell you, I take it.
Painful for me to admit, Fig, you got to be careful now. You won't be able to squeeze that head out of this door now.
Yeah.
Got to be careful. But, I think you hit the nail on the head, man.
Yeah,
well done.
I didn't. Yeah. Yeah. He made some big plays down the stretch. What the hell happened to Stephon Diggs? I don't know what the hell got in his ass.
Yeah, I mean, a little revenge game.
Yeah, Cardi. All right, coming up, we hear from you. We hear from the people. All right, now that we look at it, their last two games, 70-10 against the Ravens and the Titans. 713-572-4610. Figgy will get you uploaded on the phone. We've been doing this since the season started. Have they done enough to prove to you that they can make a real run for a playoff spot? Have they done enough now? We'll hear from you, 713-572-4610, next as we continue right here on The Drive.